Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about the sword and the scepter. Our article is by Callie Patterson and Steve Nelson from the New York Post and is entitled, Ex-Trump Aide Peter Navarro Says Feds Put Me in Leg Irons for Contempt of Congress. Peter Navarro, a top trade advisor to the Trump administration, accused the Justice Department and FBI of heavy-handed and unfair treatment Friday after he was indicted and put in leg irons, he said, by the FBI on contempt of Congress charges for failing to comply with a subpoena from the House Select Committee investigating last year's Capitol riot. Navarro, 72, who faces two counts for flouting the demands for information, also claimed he was tossed in a cell once occupied by would-be Reagan assassin John Hinckley Jr. Who are these people? This is not America, Navarro said during his initial appearance in Washington, D.C. federal court. I was a distinguished public servant for 4 years. Elsewhere in the hearing, Navarro described the House panel as a sham committee and blasted prosecutors as despicable. The Trump loyalist told the judge that he would represent himself against the charges, which each carry a minimum of 30 days and a maximum of 1 year in prison, as well as a fine of up to $100,000. Navarro faces one contempt count for failing to appear for a deposition and another for failing to produce documents requested by the committee. He told reporters outside court that rather than being informed he needed to turn himself in, he was arrested by an FBI agent while trying to board a flight to Nashville for a television appearance and was told that he could not contact anyone. He called the January 6th panel a kangaroo committee and encouraged supporters to buy his forthcoming book because, as he put it, that's going to be my legal defense. They put me in leg irons. They stuck me in a cell. By the way, just a historical note, I was in John Hinckley's cell, Navarro said bitterly. They seemed to think that that was like an important historical note. That's punitive. What they did to me today violated the Constitution. The China Hawk, an economist by training, claimed that he would forego hiring an attorney in order to preserve his nest egg and alleged he was grievously wronged by the Justice Department and Democrats. On Wednesday, I reached out to the Justice Department. I offered them a possible way forward, Navarro told reporters. They responded with effectively the same kind of thing as you see in Stalin's Russia or the Chinese Communist Party. I'm representing myself pro se because I do not want to be dragged down in the muck spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in my retirement savings on this kind of venture, he added. The Justice Department announced the indictment Friday morning, 3 days after Navarro sued the committee in a bid to quash the subpoena. He is the second Trump ally to be charged with contempt in connection with a congressional investigation into the events of January 6, 2021. Trump's former White House strategist Steve Bannon was indicted in November by a federal grand jury on two counts of contempt of Congress after he refused to testify before the committee, the first such prosecution since 1983. Bannon was not a White House employee at the time of the riot. House Democrats have asked the Justice Department to indict other former Trump aides, including former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, for declining to fully cooperate with their requests. The Democrat-led House committee will hold public hearings next week regarding the events that occurred before and during the riot, in which a wild mob of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol and disrupted certification of President Biden's victory in the Electoral College. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi rejected pro-Trump Republicans nominated to the panel by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy before allowing anti-Trump Republican reps Adam Kinzinger of Illinois and Liz Cheney of Wyoming to join. In his lawsuit, Navarro claimed Biden overstepped his authority by setting aside Trump's assertion of executive privilege over some records. He also accused Democrats of weaponizing the committee to punish Trump and his allies. Repeated abuses by partisans and political score settlers like those on the committee have institutionalized a partisan weaponization of Congress's investigatory powers that now threatens the delicate balance and separation of powers between the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of our government, Navarro wrote on the filing. Navarro gave an interview to MSNBC anchor Ari Melber on Thursday night, and the TV host noted it was unclear whether Trump actually sought to assert privilege or to protect Navarro, which could provide a legal basis for a challenge. Okay, so if you followed the news of Navarro's arrest, you, like me, might be thinking that this is a big step towards living in a totalitarian state. And you'd be right. Going after political opponents on the flimsiest pretexts and demanding any and all information about their lives is not what equal justice under law is supposed to look like. The simple fact that nobody has been prosecuted for contempt of Congress since 1983 ought to tell you an awful lot. That's before I was born. Nobody has actually been prosecuted for this in nearly 40 years. But hey, if you've got the power and you want to go after your political adversaries, why not? Friends, let me be clear. This smacks of tyranny. And the path we're on could have disastrous repercussions. And moreover, this is a deeply theological issue. This is a biblical issue. Let's deal with the ideas, beginning with political and building up to the biblical and theological issues of this whole disgusting circus. Here's the deal. You don't have to like Donald Trump to be opposed to Navarro being arrested, humiliated, and prosecuted on trumped up charges. You can believe that January 6th was a terrible, awful threat to democracy and still be opposed to other threats to our republic. You don't have to pick and choose. You can both be opposed to January 6th and be opposed to Navarro being treated as he has been. And in fact, it's crucial that you are opposed. It's crucial that Americans take a principled stand against the naked use of power. Let me explain. Everything that's political is connected to the use of power. No sensible person disagrees. And no sensible person disagrees with the fact that in a republic, the party in power has a mandate to use that power in keeping with their campaign promises and the good of their constituents. The use of power is not bad. Indeed, the only reason we have governments is so that we can choose and hold accountable those who exercise power. So using power isn't bad. Using power unaccountably and unequally and maliciously, that's bad. Friends, consider two cases. One, consider Peter Navarro, a person who had nothing to do with January 6th and who has a better claim to executive privilege than Eric Holder did when he was treating Congress with contempt. And by the way, a judge agreed that Holder was in the wrong and that Holder needed to turn over his documents, and Holder still refused to comply. Was he arrested? Was he frog marched out of an international airport? Was he put in like irons? No. Navarro was treated as he was treated because he's against the swamp. And the swamp loves the swamp, and any threat to the swamp must be destroyed. Holder is all about the deep state and the swamp, so he can violate norms and laws, and he's cool. Or consider the second case. Michael Sussman being acquitted by a jury with three Clinton campaign donors, an AOC donor, a woman whose daughter is on the same crew team with Sussman's daughter, and an Obama-appointed judge. So Sussman, who clearly lied to the FBI, is acquitted, and Navarro is sent to jail. Friends, this is bad and dangerous. It's bad because it looks like there is not equal justice under law. It looks like the deep state liberal Democrats are wielding power and trying to crush opposition and making sure that those on their side never have to face up for what they've done. This matters a lot, because when equal justice under law is out the door, then all we have is pure power. And that's a terrifying and very unstable place to be. Security comes from the respect and adherence to norms and the rule of law. Now, to be fair, you might say, but Luke, Navarro is breaking a norm and a law by not testifying before Congress. Congress clearly has the constitutional power to investigate and subpoena. But friends, be careful with your thinking. It is clear, not only in legal history, but in legal theory, that the congressional subpoena power is not limitless. There are real and stringent limits on what Congress can and can't subpoena. Now, there is no master list anywhere that says when Congress can and can't subpoena. But none of us want to live in a world where Congress can just subpoena anyone at any time for any pretext, whatever. Navarro stuck to his guns and resisted the subpoena. He's now been indicted. But what about Eric Holder? Did the DOJ come get him? Did he face arrest? You see, brothers and sisters, Navarro had nothing to do with January 6th, and Congress knows it. But this is their attempt at harassing and intimidating people, and harassment and intimidation are bad enough. But when the game is rigged so that not only can you harass and intimidate, but your political operatives are free from ever facing legal consequences, that's when people start getting frustrated. That's when people no longer see the FBI as a nonpartisan law enforcement agency and see it as the police arm of the Democrat Party. That's when things get scary. Equal justice under law matters. It is literally the only recourse we have against tyranny and anarchy. As I'm recording this, there is breaking news that a man from California went to Chevy Chase with a gun and other murder accoutrements to kill Justice Kavanaugh. He told police his motivation was to get more gun control. I will let the irony stand on its own merits without comment. But here's the point, friends. We're living in a divided country. We're living in a nation where half the country thinks it's okay to murder babies, or at least sides with the political party that does. We live in a nation where half the country thinks that riots and terrorism are legitimate political strategies, or at least half sides with the political party that does. We live in a republic wherein half of the populace thinks that boys can be girls and school children can be cats and dogs, or at least sides with the political party that does. Is it any wonder that we're divided? No, it's no wonder. But the thing that's supposed to hold us together, despite the division, is the rule of law and the promise of equal justice under law. But when that promise vanishes, and everything becomes power and the will to exercise power, then we're in for a long and terrifying road, because that road ends in horror. And the political persecution of enemies is a biblical and theological issue. The Bible is very clear that there are two foundations for political power, the scepter and the sword. The scepter represents government and rule through the consent of the governed, characterized by the rule of law and social norms. The sword represents naked power. Ezekiel 21, verses 8 through 12 say this: "The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, prophesy and say, this is what the Lord says. A sword, sharpened and polished, sharpened for the slaughter, polished to flash like lightning. Shall we rejoice in the scepter of my royal son? The sword despises every such stick. The sword is appointed to be polished, to be grasped with the hand. It is sharpened and polished, made ready for the hand of the slayer. Cry out and wail, son of man, for it is against my people. It is against all the princes of Israel. They are thrown to the sword along with my people. Therefore, beat your breast." I want us to focus especially on that expression in verse 10. Shall we rejoice in the scepter of my royal son? The sword despises every such stick. Friends, the power of the scepter is the power of the consent of the governed. It is the people as a whole agreeing to submit to the governing authorities for the good of the body politic. It doesn't mean everyone consents, and it doesn't mean that people consenting consent to every iterated action of government. It means that people will go along with the status quo because it's better than any alternative. But the sword is altogether different. The sword seizes power by force and retains power by force. It rules not by consent of the governed, but by consent of enough of the governed to intimidate and cow any opposition. It is not rule by law, but by the fist. And the sword despises the scepter, because a sword can cut and smash a scepter. The scepter is a symbol of the consent of the governed and the rule of law. It is power given by others. The sword is not a symbol, but a tool of rule by force. It is power taken by one's self. And I could go on and on about this topic for a long time, because this is such a crucial issue to political theology. But for sake of today's episode, let's pause and just consider our American situation. Think about our contemporary context. Let me ask you a question. How long can our system of government survive when one side is grasping for the scepter and the other is wielding the sword? Can our republic survive? And what happens when both sides decide to wield the sword? What happens when people frustrated by the rule of law and political and social norms being violated determine that violence is their only recourse? It happened in 1776. It happened in Bacon's Rebellion. It happened in the Whiskey Rebellion. It happened in Shays' Rebellion and the Civil War and the Indian Rebellions and dozens of other revolts, major and minor, and it happens now with the BLM and Antifa riots. One side of the political aisle, or at least members of one side, seem to think that violence is legitimate. As of now, they face an opposition party that is still trying to govern through rule of law. Conservatives are trying to conserve the rule of law and legal norms. But what happens when the conservatives decide that the union is not worth conserving anymore? What happens when conservatives decide that violence must be met with violence? What happens when the disenfranchised take up arms? I shudder to think. And I pray that it will never come to that. But the naked, sword-wielding power grab will either be corrected constitutionally, electorally, or it will turn into tyranny, or it will be overthrown violently. And I love my country. And I pray against violence, and I pray that you should pray against violence and seek constitutional and ethical and legal reforms so that the rule of law may truly rule in this nation. I pray that we will not fall into tyranny or into disintegration, but friends, I've studied too much history and too much Bible to believe that the status quo can go on indefinitely. We need to pray for this nation. We need to pray for peace. We need to pray for the rule of law. Most of all, we need to pray for righteousness. We need to pray for the scepter and not for the sword. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.